Welcome back to the program. Time for our Daily Flames Roundtable for Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. Our Daily Flames Roundtable every day at 4 o'clock. Around the table, it's Pat Steinberg, Will Nault, and Logan Gordon. And we have been doing our 2019-20 Calgary Flames player report cards. Did five last week and kicking off this week by looking at the season of Michael Backlund. Guys, let's jump right in. Michael Backlund last year, 70 games played in the regular season, 16 goals, 29 assists, 45 points. He would add 4 goals and 6 points in 10 playoff games during the return to play. Logan Gordon, your letter grade for Michael Backlund.
Michael Backlund gets a B+ from me. I think that as the year progressed and as we got closer, unfortunately for Michael, as we got closer to the stoppage in play in the spring, he was really starting to turn it on offensively, and I thought him and Tkachuk and Mangiapane had really, you know, started to click as a line and were starting to take some of that offensive heat away from Gaudreau, Monahan, and Lindholm. He's so important to this team because I think he, you know, he's so valuable. He can take faceoffs. He can, you know, play in different spots. He's so good defensively, and to have that, you know, line that you can trust against other teams' top lines is so incredibly important. And when he adds that offense like he was later on in the season, then I think he becomes even that much more of an important piece for this team. I think that, you know, in a perfect world, if Backlund's your third center, you're extremely happy, and, you know, he can take off all the pressure, you know, defensively against those top matchups. But for a number two center for this team, I think he's next to, you know, impossible to replace if you lose him in your lineup, because I don't think anybody else, aside maybe from Lindholm, has the two-way skill that Backlund provides this team will. So I'm going to go with a B+.
Yeah, I felt very similar to you in terms of I did think Michael Backlund really struggled out of the gate last year. It took him a little while to get his feet underneath him, but he and I think part of that too was about the midway point when he was asked to move to the wing. And I thought he was quite lost on the wing at times. Didn't really, you know, he was kind of out of his role. He was asked to be more offensive and a finisher of sorts. But he's more, as we know, that responsible center iceman who excels in both ends of the rink. So after that, I thought he really found a groove. And to your point, I thought the shutdown came at an awful time for him. He had 23 points in 20 games post All-Star break this past season, and then of course the shutdown, and I thought he was one of the better players in the playoffs, so he was able to kind of pick right back up where he left off. And I thought Pat, in his entire time with the Flames, he's been looked at for a lot of people as kind of that stable centerman who can help your wingers kind of find their game. And I thought you can say that for what he's done, mm-hmm. You know, essentially playing from day one with Matthew Tkachuk in the NHL. We've seen how well Tkachuk has played, and I think it's no secret that he's been paired with Backlund from the start of his NHL career. And then I thought he's done a real nice job with the development for Andrew Mangiapane as well, and I think all of us around this table would agree that that's probably going to be the penciled-in second line to begin next season. And I'm with you, Logo. I think a perfect scenario, he is your shutdown number three center. But the Flames are going to rely on him as a number two center. And I think he's showing you, as his NHL career has grown, that the offensive ability is there at times. I was thinking and leaning B+, but I think his season was better than that. I will go into the A's. I'll go A- for Michael Backlund. But hey, when he doesn't produce, Pat, I think you certainly notice that in the Flames lineup, and I think you can look at his splits last year month by month,
yep,
and you can pretty much correlate that with the Flames results. He got better as the season went along, and the COVID-19 shutdown was pretty disastrous for Michael Backlund, considering how good he was prior.
I will give him credit, though, because I think, to your point, and I'm with you, when the season picked back up again, I don't really feel like he missed a beat. Like, it didn't feel like the shutdown was like hurt his game. I would have been really interested to see how it could have kept on going and how that
Agreed.
Line could have kept on rolling if there wasn't a shutdown.
Agreed.
But I feel like he did come back and continued playing at a high level in the postseason. I'm gonna go A- as well. It's B+, A-. There's like nothing between them. We're all essentially essentially on the same page here, gentlemen, because I thought that you're right. Playing down the middle, it did take a little while for Backlund's game to get where he wanted it to. I thought it was starting to round into form right as the Bill Peters scenario started playing itself out in late November, and very shortly after that, Jeff Ward tried some different combinations for a couple of months, and for essentially 2 months, it was funny. As quickly as Lindholm got moved to center from the wing, the opposite happened for Backlund from center to the wing. And I'm with you, like, that was not the best place for him. He hadn't played the wing since like his rookie season in the NHL. That was not a great fit. As soon as they reunited him and Matthew Tkachuk, and as soon as they put Matthew Tkachuk on that line, those three were dynamite. That trio from the beginning of February when they were put back together until the shutdown in mid-March, one of the best lines in the NHL, period. Not just the best line on the Flames, but analytically, the points they were putting up, the rates they were scoring at 5-on-5, the matchups they were taking on, they were ridiculous. And Backlund was the driving force. He was the best guy on that line for that month and a half. So, yeah, I go A minus. I probably could have been an A had there not been the slow start to the season and that stretch on the wing. But if we're taking the whole season in its totality, I go A minus as well. But I really do. And what was really, I think, encouraging, Will, was what we saw from him in the playoffs. Because prior to this postseason, I would have put Backlund in the same camp as Monahan, as Giordano, as Gaudreau, not being able to raise their game come the postseason and not be as impactful in the playoffs as they were in the regular season. Like, he was that was one of the big noticeable things in the series against Colorado. Yeah, the Gaudreau line dropped off against the Avalanche, but so did the Backlund line, and so did Backlund. Well, I didn't find that in this year's playoffs. I'm with you. I thought he was one of their better, more consistent players in the postseason.
Yeah, from start to finish. And again, I thought the entire team, Pat, as a whole, struggled at even strength in the playoffs, but that line consistently was one that at least gave them life and gave them shifts that maybe they could build off of at different times. And again, yes, the line was certainly hurt, and I don't think Michael Backlund was the same when Matthew Tkachuk went down. But prior to that, I thought he was one of their top players in the playoffs, no questions asked, and I'm with you. I think prior to that, there had been some questions about his playoffs, and rightly so. But last year, certainly, especially at even strength, where the entire team struggled, I thought he was one of the very few rare bright spots.
Logan, Peter Labardi has talked a lot and has made this point a lot over the last two or three seasons, I want to say. Not just the line, but the player itself. When Michael Backlund is on, when he's at the top of his game on any given night, the Calgary Flames very rarely lose, and he's right. And this year, especially in the second half of the season, I felt like we saw a lot of that. He was on an absolute offensive tear, as we talked about. Had this season gone 82, he probably would have been in the 50 to 55 point range when it was all said and done. Do we sometimes, because we talk so much about Backlund as a shutdown center, and we talk so much about what he does on the defensive side of the two-way game, do we sometimes forget or maybe not give enough credit to the offensive upside that Backlund has and how the team excels when that offensive upside is being realized?
I don't know if we don't give him enough credit. At least to my view of it, I would say that I see Michael Backlund as a streaky scorer. When he's on and he's, you know, feeling it offensively, it comes in, you know, bigger games and for a consistent while, and then it kind of goes quiet for a bit. I do think there's something to be said about the expectation and what this team looks like when Backlund is playing at that level, and the pressure that it eases on Gaudreau and Monahan and Lindholm's back, because I think that this team just slots so much better when they have another offensive weapon like that. I think the only thing I would say to Backlund is maybe it's just not a, you know, it comes in five or six games and then he's a little bit quiet for three or four games. And I can't back that up with anything statistical, but that's just kind of how I felt about Michael for a while when it comes to his offense. There's games, and maybe that's, you know, just a byproduct of playing against top players all the time. Sometimes you're going to have games or stretches where you're not always being able to put up points, because it's probably easy enough to say that it's not, you know, the easiest task to put up offense when you're playing against the other team's top line. So I think there's a lot of value to this team and to this conversation when the offense is spread out evenly. But I think that's something that can be said for pretty much most teams. But Calgary, to the, you know, to the most extreme extent of that, because of how much pressure is put on one line and because the Flames perceive top line will, you know, carry so much of the offensive struggles for this team on a day-in, day-out basis, that Backlund and company, you know, really take the pressure off when he is offensively going.
Yeah, I think when he's offensively on his game, it's a different team. And you look at the way they played when he was on his tear that we mentioned, kind of when he was moved back to center, the whole team was clicking. And there you go. There's your evidence right there of how well the team plays when he is going offensively. And Pat, to your question about not getting enough credit offensively, I think a lot of that, guys, comes from the fact that he was a first-round pick. He came in an era where I think Flame fans were starved for an offensive centerman, and especially a young talent. Okay, here's a kid that I think a lot of people watched light up the world in 2009 in the Western Hockey League playoffs with the Kelowna Rockets, then goes to the Memorial Cup, and you're thinking, oh, the Flames might have an offensive talent here at center to play with Jerome McGinley. And then he came to the NHL, and it just didn't work initially as an offensive piece. Yep. He took a long time to get going. But you look at the last five seasons, he's had no fewer than 45 points. This year, as you mentioned, Pat, I think he would have been well on pace for more than 50 for the second time in those five seasons. And we just talked about his playoff with 6 points, 4 goals, and 10 games. He has gotten better every year in the NHL as an all-around player. I think his offensive peak may have been 2-3 years ago. But, Pat, I think a lot of that misconception or belief that Backlund can't do it offensively comes from the way he began his career, the fact he was a first-round pick, and the fact that for the first 4 or 5 seasons in the NHL, his numbers were, quite frankly, disappointing offensively. And I don't think enough people respected the way he played the game in his own end, because everyone was just starved. Okay, first round talent, we saw what you did in junior, let's go. Why is this not happening in the NHL? And again, right, pro sports is all about results, and I think impatience comes in a lot of the time with that. So that, for me, is why I don't think Michael Backlund gets an offensive credit.
Yeah, and I mean, I take a look at what he's done, to your point. It really seems to have clicked the last half decade or so. 47 points, 53 points, 45 points, 47 points. This year, 45 and 70. Probably the terror that he was going on, he probably would have ended up closer to 55 when it was all said and done. At the very least, would have been in the range of his career high of 53 points from 16, 17. And it seems like, yeah, from an offensive standpoint, and I think here's why I think what A, you're saying is true, and B, why it's true, is that for the longest time, Backlund was used because he was so intelligent and remained so intelligent and was so good on the defensive side of things that coaches would just use him in that role. And when you're still a young player in the NHL, you're really focused on making sure that you don't make mistakes, that you don't lose that matchup, that you don't get scored on. So you're doing the job well. You're shutting down and going head-to-head with the other team's top players very well, and you're taking on that defensive responsibility effectively. But the next step from, because that's not a two-way forward, that's a defensive forward, the next step is turning yourself into that two-way threat. And the last 5 years, he's become one of the top 15 or so two-way centers, I would think, in the NHL, top 15, top 20 in terms of what they're able to do at both ends of the ice and how they're utilized. And is he ever going to be at the Bergeron or O'Reilly or Kopitar level? No, that's because I don't think the offensive upside is quite that high. But a guy that can take on the top matchups every single night in every situation at every area of the ice and still get you 50 points a year on top of that, there's a lot of value in that. So I know, and I guess the question, and I understand where you're coming from, Logo. I guess the reason I asked the question is because I think the point totals, if you were to just look at them 20 years down the road, you look at Backlund's point totals and say, okay, well, yeah, I have 45, 55 points a year. That's fine, but it's not great. I think it's the importance of those points and the points and how they come and the role he's played in is why I asked that question.
Yeah, and I think it's totally fair. I mean, this is a guy that, you know, in a line that we've really projected, you know, as the shutdown line for this team. And, you know, it's a conversation whereas, you know, yes, you need to score points. You need to be, you know, dangerous offensively, but the value that they bring away from all of that is so important to this team because the first line doesn't do that here because Sean Monahan and Johnny Gaudreau, you know, haven't been the greatest defensively. You don't just line up, you know, one-on-one here in Calgary most nights. That's just not, you know, the smartest strategy. I think that, you know, there's a perceived, if Michael Backlund and company are shutting down players, that, you know, they've done their job for the night. If they held the other team's best line to, you know, a couple dangerous chances or 1 point or something like that, you'd probably be pretty happy for it. And the offense maybe seems as a bonus sometimes.
Yep. Yeah, it's Will Nault, Logan Gordon, Pat Steinberg, Daily Calgary Flames Roundtable. 31 years old now, Will. What's the best, like, how do you see his role on this team going forward?
I think it's the same thing. I don't think you change it. I think we just talked about how he's finally found his game, and he's finally gotten to those offensive numbers that the team was hoping he'd get to the last half decade. I think he's never a guy that's going to lose a ton of foot speed as he ages into his 30s. I don't believe. I think you keep using him as that, you know, shutdown center that can also chip in offensively and plays on that line that also, you know, defends the opposition's best, but also helps you in the offensive game. I don't think you change his role, and I don't see it changing in the next couple of years myself.
Yeah, I'm not as sure on that, and I think the only reason I say that is because I feel like there's still a shakeup to this top six coming, and although my one reservation is that, you know, this team would have to acquire or, you know, change Elias Lindholm's role dramatically for them to find themselves in a position where they have a better center option than Michael Backlund. I don't think that just, you know, comes out of nowhere. That's a very hard thing to do because I do think his optimal usage for this team is as a third line center, but they just don't have anybody in that spot to take him away from what he does on the second line right now. So I think it's going to stay the way it is unless something major happens. But with that being said, I think that there's a possibility that, you know, if Lindholm does wind up moving to center or they wind up making some sort of dramatic change in their top six, I could see his role with this team changing as it goes forward. I'm with Will as far as, you know, how he's going to age heading into his 30s here. I have no worry about that. He's always been a good skater. He's, you know, in good shape. He doesn't have a physically demanding role like someone like Lucic had earlier on in his career. I think he should be pretty durable going forward. But that's the only way I could see his role changing is if there was a major shakeup in the top six involving a center.
This is a really interesting one for me. And first of all, I think it's important to point out, like, when you talk about the durability, remember, Will, like, for the first half of his career, Michael Backlund got the reputation of being a bit of a band-aid. And there was like a thought that, geez, is this guy ever going to be able to stay healthy? Well, that's all he's done the last 5 years or so. 82, 81, 82. He missed five games in 18, 19, and then played every single game this year, 70 in the regular season, and then 10 more in the playoffs. He's really been able to buck that monkey off his back about being injury prone, and he's proven that he can.
Maybe he can teach Valimaki a couple of things.
Well, but you know, it's an important but it's funny you bring that up. Like, it's an important example for a guy like Valimaki or some of the other young players that have battled injuries early in their career. It doesn't always have to end that way. Sometimes freak accidents are just freak accidents, and Backlund is a really good example of that. But in terms of where he fits going forward, this one's fascinating to me because I don't think there would be any problem if next year Backlund, Tkachuk, Mangiapane are back together and they continue being used in that in the way they were as the number one head-to-head.
Yeah, I was more talking on the immediacy, by the way, guys, like the next 2 years.
Well, and this is and me too. So this is what's so interesting to me. If that decision is made and they do make a big trade, say that they move Monahan out and now Lindholm moves to center, well, I don't really think it changed a whole lot with the way that Backlund is used. If they don't make that big trade, and if Monahan and Gaudreau are still here to start next season, that's where it becomes really interesting, because I don't know, and this is a conversation I can't wait to have with all of us tomorrow, but I don't know if you come right back, no questions asked, with Lindholm, Monahan, and Gaudreau together, because how far have you gotten with those as a trio, right? So do you start to look at your forward lines a little bit differently? Do you start to look at Monahan, Lindholm, and Backlund as a 1-2-3 in whatever order down the middle, and does that start to change Backlund's role? Could you use Backlund as a straight up, to your point, shut down center and use him in defensive situations and with other defensively oriented guys and put him in the toughest of the head-to-head matchups and kind of use him in that straight hard matching role? Or do you keep on using him with Tkachuk and Mangiapane, even if you've got Lindholm and Monahan down the middle? I don't have a definitive answer for it, Will, but I think what this forward group looks like next year is going to really help define exactly what Backlund's role is next year. And I'm fascinated to see how it all plays out.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that's dependent on what the rest of your forward group looks like. And a big question mark for me, guys, is Sam Bennett. Where does he slide in? What's his role? Because I think a lot of that is kind of tied together when you're talking about Michael Backlund. And I guess to kind of bring it full circle, Logo, for me, if you're using Michael Backlund as a shutdown center in the third line center role, I think you're losing the offensive ability we just talked about. And what he had finally found in the NHL, I think you would lose that. And I don't know. Yes, he is such a good defensive center, but I also don't know, because of that, if I can sit here and tell you that's the best thing for the Calgary Flames going forward. So I don't have a definitive answer either. A lot of that is tied to, you know, what the rest of the offseason looks like. But unless there's a massive change to the forward group in terms of a trade, I'm just not sure I'm ready to go on that same road, because I think you'd be losing Backlund's offensive production if you moved him into that third-line center role.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I think that's the most important caveat to any of this, is I don't think the Flames can afford to move Backlund to that third line center role that we, you know, project as maybe the best place for him on a full-time basis going forward, unless they bring in a center of considerable talent to play ahead of him.
Even if you move Lindholm there?
Yeah. Because I'm assuming if you're moving Lindholm there, Monahan's either on the wing or not here, right?
Nope. I was talking like if you have Lindholm, Monahan, and Backlund as your three centers.
I still don't know that I'm comfortable.
And the only reason I ask is because, you know, Jeff Ward's talked about it, Lou's talked about it, a few others have said, you know, there's a little bit of Bergeron and Lindholm, and he can, so that's the reason I asked the question, could Lindholm play that same role that Backlund has played the last number of years?
Yeah, but for me, Lindholm's your number one in that scenario, and you know the offensive ask is bigger from your number one in that scenario. I don't love that, unless it's you're talking about Monahan on the wing in that scenario. But I still need to see another caliber center in there before I'm comfortable moving Backlund all the way down.
I'll give you my thought on it. Kind of my the way I envision it tomorrow and some of the ways that they could go about doing that if they wanted. Final thought, and we don't have to go a ton on this, but how do we project the expansion draft for the Calgary Flames? Like, is it for me, there's no questions asked. Michael Backlund is protected in the expansion draft. I'm not exposing that player. But what about you, Will? Just knowing that they might have some decisions to make, and you know that could there might be a possibility that Sam Bennett, for instance, is exposed. Like, what about you and protecting Backlund at the expansion draft?
As of today, I'd be a firm no. If this team again has a disaster year in the playoffs and it doesn't go the way they want, I might have a different answer. I just might think it might be the end of an era and you might want to turn a page. But Michael Backlund is a hard player for me, Pat, to just give up for nothing. So right. I would have a hard time even at that point. If next year doesn't go very well and they still, you know, flame out, pardon the pun, in the playoffs, I still don't know if I'm going to expose Backlund. And if I'm doing a complete yard sale or changing the look of my team, that's still not a player that I'm ready to give up on for nothing. So you would have to probably, a lot of things would have to go wrong for me to get into the yes camp in terms of exposing Michael Backlund.
Yeah, at this point, with the expansion draft still a year out, I don't think I'm at the position where I would 100% commit to protecting Backlund in the expansion, just because I think there's a lot of different directions that this franchise could go in depending on how this season specifically goes. If it came down to exposing Backlund and potentially losing him for nothing, I think the team would be a lot smarter off trying to move him elsewhere and try to get some assets in return for him, because I think that this is for sure a player you don't lose for nothing. But depending on what things look like after next season, and I'm not saying I wouldn't protect him. I'm not saying that at all, because I think he's a really good player and an important player for your team. But if you're, you know, depending on what the roster looks like next year, and if you're potentially talking about him being your third line center, I don't know that at this point I'm ready to 100% commit to say that I wouldn't expose him.
For me, I am, but it's interesting because, like, as it stands right now, and this is just as the roster is set right now, Tkachuk, Gaudreau, Monahan, Lindholm, Dubé, Mangiapane, I think are 100%. I have Backlund ahead of a couple of those guys, but if we're putting Backlund into this conversation, those are the other six, so it would come down to Backlund or Bennett for that seventh spot to protect. Right now, for me, it's a no-brainer. Maybe that could change in a year, but I don't think so. I don't know if Bennett's going to be able to do anything over the course of the regular season to say that, yes, he deserves to be protected over Backlund, but I don't know if that's going to be necessarily a unanimous opinion right now, let alone when we get to those decisions having to be made. So it's a fascinating one, gentlemen. And Michael Backlund gets a B+ and 2 A- from us. Another one of our 2019-20 player report cards. Go ahead. Sorry,
Pat. Just wanted to say this at the very end, because we talk a lot about how bad the drafting was in that era. Michael Backlund, for me, the best draft pick Daryl Sutter ever made.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair. Him, yeah, I've put him ahead of Dion. So, yeah, I would go 100% on that one.
Although he did draft TJ Brody, so it's a pretty good find in the fourth round.
Yeah, that was a really good find in the fourth round. Those would be the three. Dion, Brody, Backlund. Those are the three biggest successes.
Nothing else, really close.
Unfortunately.
Actually, sorry, we forgot about Chris Chucko. Oh, he would have been number one.
And on that note, there's another edition of the Daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills.